manages Marlin ISD outside of Waco and Shepherd ISD east of Conroe. The agency gave back control of 8 districts to their local school boards. In other instances, it has shut them down or annexed them to other districts. For the rest of the story, please go to texastribune.org. This is Steve Gallington of the People's News, which can be heard on Sundays at noon, Mondays at 9 a.m., and Thursdays at 9 a.m. on 90.1 KPFT HD2, Houston's community radio.
This is KPFT Houston.
Percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. That means it's 8 p.m. on a Thursday and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT 90.1 FM. Well, I'm your guest host tonight, Eric Heen, and here every week we feature storytellers who will take us on magical journeys before landing us safely back into the present. Well, tonight, my friends, all of our stories are coming from the magical land of Ireland. Ireland's a place of green pastures, enchanting music, vibrant people. So it's no wonder that so many fascinating stories have come from that beautiful country. Everything from myths and legends to folk tales and ghost stories. And no one tells an Irish story better than the Irish themselves. So tonight, we're bringing to you 3 accomplished Irish storytellers. 2 will actually be airing from Ireland through Zoom recordings, and the other one's an honorary Irish storyteller coming to us from Canada. So let's start it off with one of the most beloved storytellers in all of Ireland, Pat Spaden. Pat, affectionately known as Pat the Hat, specializes in traditional Irish tales that make you laugh and cry and occasionally shiver. Pat has traveled far and wide and has been featured at storytelling festivals throughout the world. And now he's coming to us from his home in Cork, Ireland. Pat, welcome to So What's Your Story?
I'm delighted, Eric, to be invited. Delighted.
You bet. So you seem like a natural born storyteller. You always told stories.
Now, it's a funny way you asked that question, because I've often been asked, have you been a storyteller all your life? And I would answer by saying, not yet.
How do you get the nickname Pat the Hat, by the way?
I'm not sure. I started wearing a hat years ago because being follically challenged, it was the way, kind of half disguising it. And then the hat went everywhere with me. And then my son said, look, he said Pat the Hat. My son called me Pat the Hat. And the name stuck.
It stuck. Well, without further ado, why don't we hear your first story?
Well, the first story has a connection with America, because 26 years ago, an American writer by the name of Chuck Kruger moved to Ireland, to the very southwest coast of Ireland, and bought a farm on an island, the island of Cape Clear. And there he started a storytelling festival called the Cape Clear International Storytelling Festival, which was due to take place again this September, but because of the COVID, it was cancelled. But I have never missed a festival in the 26 years. But I heard a story there I thought was very, very clever years ago, and it was about this man living on the island of Cape Clear. Now, he was married, but that wasn't his only problem. But this man, not only was he married, but living in the same house with him, with his wife, was his mother and his father. And the poor man was nagged from morning to night. He'd wake up in the morning and the nagging would start. his wife would start first. How is it, she said, everybody in this island has children, and we have no children. They all have children. We have no children. On and on and on she went. He could take no more. So he went into the next room for a bit of peace and quietness. Did he get it? Uh-oh. There was his father. And his father started to nag him. The father said, how is it everybody in this island has loads of money? How come everybody's rich and we're poor? They've all money, we haven't. And he went on and on and on. The boy could take no more. But luckily, there were three rooms in the house, and he went down to the last room for a bit of peace and quietness. Did he get it? Uh-oh. There was his mother, and she was as blind as a bat. Oh, she said, I can't see whether it's day or night, winter or summer, as if it's his fault that she'd be blind, and twasn't. So when men get nagged like that, there's only one thing to do, take a hike. Mm-hmm. So he went for a walk down by the beach, and he kicked a stone, and there was a funny sound came out of it, and he reached down and picked her up, and what was it, Ronnie? A small, flattened up teapot, and he gave her a bit of a rub like that. Next, there was a big burst of smoke, and out came a genie. I am the genie of the lamp. Oh, he said, thanks be to goodness, you're exactly what I wanted. I could badly do with three wishes. Take it easy, said the genie. I'm an Irish genie. But what difference does that make? He said, an Irish genie can only give you one wish. Oh, come on, he said, I'm stuck. I need three wishes. One wish, he says, take it or leave it. He said, can I think about it? So I went home to his wife. He said, I just met a genie. The genie's after giving me a wish. What will I wish for? Oh, she said, we're married for years. We've no family. Wouldn't it be lovely to have a baby laughing or crying? Why don't you wish for a baby? I'll do that, he said. I'll wish for a baby. And he went into the next room. He said, Father, Father, I've great news. I just met a genie. The genie's after giving me a wish, and I'm going to wish for a baby. And the father said, a baby? A baby? What kind of a clown of an idiot did I rear, wasting a wish on a baby? Would you not wish for gold, he said, and we'll have loads of money. All right, so Dada, I'll do that. And he went down to the last room. He said, Mother, our troubles are over. I just met a genie. The genie's after giving me a wish. I got a wish for gold, he said. That's what I'm going to do. She said, what good is gold for when I can't see whether it's a day or night, winter or summer? Would you not wish that I get my eyesight back? So the next morning he went home, picked up the teapot and gave it a shine. Okay, the genie. The genie said, well, did you make up your mind? I did. Do you know what he wished for? He wished that his blind mother could see a brand new baby in a cradle made out of solid gold.
Ah, yes. That's so logical. Just combine the three wishes into one big wish.
Yeah, how clever.
So Irish genies only give you one wish.
Always remember that.
Yeah, if I ever run into an Irish genie, I'll remember. Oh, listen to me. I'm starting to get an Irish accent here.
Now, the one thing, if you ever come to Ireland, if ever this COVID pandemic finishes, do not imitate an Irish accent.
There's
one thing you never do. Top of the morning and Darby O'Gill is okay for Hollywood. Best actors in America, make a complete hames of it.
Okay. So, I'll keep that in mind, Pat. I don't want to get punched in the nose.
No. We wouldn't do that anyway.
Well, that was a great story, Pat. I loved it. Now, you have another story here. I think it's called Any News?
Well, no, that's a very Irish story, because when we meet each other in Ireland, usual greeting is Any News? And in fact, in our language, Gaelic, we would say Willain on Willain Scalagut. Have you any story? If you were to translate literally, but it basically means, have you any news? We love news. We love gossip. So if you met someone in the street, you'd say, well, any news? And there was this man left his own area, his own townland, and he was away for ages and ages. And when he came back, he met his old neighbour, and he said to the neighbour, any news? And the neighbour said, no, nothing happens here. Same old ding-dong, nothing happens here. Ah, come on, he said, I'm come for ages. You must have somebody news. No, no. No news here. Ah, for goodness sake, he said. and gone for ages. You must have some small bit of news anyway. Well, there was one bit of news. I knew it, he said. What was it? Your pet dog died. Ah, no, he said. Not my pet dog. The dog I reared from a puppy. Don't tell me he died. Died, he said. Tell me what he died from. He died from food poisoning. Food poisoning, he said. Food poisoning. Isn't that very newsworthy? And you said there was no news. Tell me, what did he eat? He ate burned horse meat. Burned horse meat, he said. Where in the name of God did he get the burned horse meat? Oh, he said, when your barn burned down, we were too slow to go in and save the horses. What, he said, my barn is burned and my horses are dead and my dog is dead. And you said there was no news. Tell me, how did a fire start in the barn? We think there might have been sparks from the house.
Oh.
Don't tell me there was a fire in the house. Burned to the ground, he said, burned to the ground. What, he said? You said there was no news. My house is burned, my barn is burned, my horse are dead, and my dog is dead. And you said there was no news. Tell me, how did a fire start in the house? We think the candles might have been a bit too close to the curtains. Candles, I said. What candles? I've had electricity for years. What candles are you talking about? Oh, we had four candles around the corpse. Corpse, he said. A corpse. Don't tell me there was a death in the family. Or your mother-in-law died. What, he said. My mother-in-law died. My house is burned. My barn is burned. And my dog is dead. And you said there was no news. What did she die of? Well, the doctor felt it was a shock, killed her. Shock? What shock? Oh, since you've been away, your wife is after running away with the postman. Other than that, I've no news.
Well, I'd say there was a little news there. Oh, my gosh. Pat, what is it about Ireland that makes it so, it's like a magical place where so many stories come? I mean, not just folk tales like that one, but legends and myths and leprechauns. What is it about Ireland?
Well, if you study folklore, you would understand that Ireland is an island on the complete west coast of Europe. We've been an island and we've been isolated. Even the Romans never came to Ireland. They came, they visited, it was pouring out of the heaven, lashing rain, and they said, that's it, we're not staying here. We were able to hold our tradition and our stories from generation to generation. And then every corner in Ireland has its own legends, whether it's the name of a field or the history behind this rock or that rock. G.K. Chesterton said that Irishmen, they love to fight, they love to drink. Most of all, they love to talk. They love their women, but they never tell them. All their wars are merry and all their songs are sad.
Ah, that says it all right there. I like that. Well, have you ever been to America?
Yeah, I've been several times. I was invited to the biggest festival in America, Jonesboro in Tennessee, at the National Storytelling Festival. I've been invited twice there, and it was a marvelous, marvelous experience.
You got another story here. I'm just waiting and dying to hear. And let's hear that story.
Well, I tell you, I would be well known as a storyteller, but I'm also more famous for something else. And that is because I have the worst sense of direction you ever had in all your life. Everywhere I go, I get lost. And in fact, last year I was going up to a festival in Galway on the west coast of Ireland. And I got complete and utterly lost. I didn't know where I was. But my feminine side was up very high that night. I decided I'd pull the car in and ask for directions. Saw this farmer in the field. Well, I presume he was a farmer anyway, because he'd loads of pigs around him. And I asked him for directions. Well, the man couldn't have been more helpful. He gave me a map, gave me a sketch, gave me directions. And I thanked him. And I was just going back to the car when out of the corner of my eye, didn't I notice, hadn't one of his pigs a wooden leg? I said, excuse me, sir. I said, the pig with the wooden leg, how did he get that wooden leg? He said, wait till I tell you about that pig. He said, you see the barn over there, big, huge, tall barn? But he said, I was working on the roof of that, Pat. He said, working on the roof. It was a wet and miserable day. And I started to slide off the roof. And you know what that pig did? He ran over three ditches, four fields, and he landed just on the spot to break my fall. Only for that pig being there, I would have broken every bone of my body. He's a great pig, granted, I said, but tell me, how did he get the wooden leg? Wait till I tell you about that pig, he said. Do you see the pond over there in the distance? Well, he said, my daughter fell into the pond. No one saw her fall in except a pig. He jumped in after her, caught her by the back of the neck, and he dragged her out. Gave her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and brought her back to life. He's a marvellous pig. Granted, I said, but tell me, how did he get the wooden leg? Oh, wait till I tell you about that pig, he said. I'm very fond of playing golf, and I play it most Saturday mornings. And you know the way some people bring my dog with them when they're going on a journey? Well, I used to bring the pig, he said. And I was going along one Saturday morning to play golf, and I got a mild heart attack. And you know what that pig did? He caught the wheel of the car, kept turning the wheel of the car, pulled the car into the side of the road, hopped out of the car, flagged down five cars until he got one. I had a cell phone with credit in it. For an ambulance. That pig that you're looking at there saved my life twice and my daughter's life once. He's a marvellous pig. And I said, but tell me, how did he get the wooden leg? Oh, he said, a pig that good, you couldn't eat him all at once.
Oh, my God. You know, Pat, in a strange way, that makes sense. Don't want to eat him all at once. Oh no,
not quality like that.
Oh, great story. Loved all your stories tonight. You know, Pat, I could sit here and listen to your stories all night long, but unfortunately, we do have some time constraints here. So I just want to get in here that you have a couple of CDs. One is called Tales from the Hat. The other one is With Apologies to Tolkien, Return of the Hat. And they can be found on your website, patspeight.com. And it's patspeight.com, patspeight.com. Well, Pat, it's been a pleasure and a delight. Thank you for being here. You're such an accomplished storyteller. Uh-oh, I almost started talking in an Irish accent there.
Don't dream of it.
Okay, well, I hope we see you here again sometime.
May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun fall lightly on your lands. And until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you in the palm of his hand.
Well, I can't think of a better way to end this segment than with an Irish blessing. Thanks so much for being here, Pat. You've been a delight, and good luck to you in all your endeavors.
Thank you.
You know, someday I'm going to go to Ireland, just sit in them pubs drinking beer with guys like Pat. Well, my next storyteller this evening is also coming to us from Ireland. His name is Frank McCarron. Frank is a community development worker, regional tour guide, and of course a storyteller from County Monaghan on the southern side of the Irish border. He grew up near the village of Tidavnet, a place steeped in legend and folklore. Frank has been telling stories for over 20 years, sharing them with children and adults throughout Ireland and beyond. Frank believes that in Ireland, a knowledge of the old tales and legends and a little bit of the Irish language brings mystery and magic of the surrounding landscape to life. Frank, thanks for being with us on So What's Your Story?
Delighted to be here, Eric.
Now, Frank, it's obvious that you're very knowledgeable and involved in Irish folklore and storytelling. And tonight you're going to tell a variety of stories from three different angles. An Irish legend, a folk tale, and I guess a real life narrative. And your first story here addresses a legend, an Irish legend named Finn McCool. So I notice this guy pops up a lot in Irish folklore. So who or what exactly is this Finn McCool?
Finn McCool, Eric, was the leader of a warrior band in Ireland called the Fianna. And it said they lived in Ireland in about the 2nd century AD. And Finn's job was to protect the shores of Ireland from invaders, carried out his work on behalf of the High King of Ireland. And he features a lot in our legends and stories.
Well, let's hear your first story here, Frank.
Finn McCool was the leader of the Fianna. And what I like about the stories of Finn is he's very wise. And in this story, you'll see a little bit of his wisdom. Fado in Erin, which in the Gaelic language means a long time ago in Ireland, Finn MacCool and his warriors from the Fianna were camped on Bin Eadar, which is the Hill of Howth near Dublin. And they were looking across the Irish Sea, and the waves of the sea were crashing onto the shore. And as Finn listened to the waves, he turned to his son, Oisín, and he said, "Oisín, what in your opinion is the sweetest music?" And his son, Oisín, said, "That's very easily told, father." He said, "The sweetest music is the music of the cuckoo at the top of the tree, casting its song out onto the breeze, telling us summer is coming." "Well, I'm surprised at you," said Gull MacMorna, who was a grizzled old veteran warrior of the Fianna, battle scars across his face, one eye missing from the battles he had been in. He said, "I'm surprised at you, Oisín, the best harpist in the Fianna. The harp is the sweetest music. You know how its melodies can move people to sadness, to joy, to passion, to lull them to slumber." But Oscar, who was Finn's grandson, said, "I'm surprised at you, Gull MacMorna, a warrior. How could you not know that the sweetest music is the sound of swords on shields in battle and the war cry of the Fianna, the Dord Fian?" Well, Diarmaid O'Divna, who was the handsomest man in Ireland, he laughed at them both. And he said, "You and your battles," he said, "do you not know that the sweetest music is the sigh of lovers as they lie together at night?" And the other warriors all had a tale of what they thought was the sweetest music. And eventually they turned back to Finn and they said, "Finn, you're the wisest among us all. What do you say is the sweetest music?" And Finn said, "All the music that you've named is sweet indeed, but the sweetest music of all is the music of what happens." Uh-huh. And Finn MacCool, that's my story.
So what do you think is the sweetest music?
I think he's right, Eric. In the current world we're living in, and we have a COVID pandemic going on all around us, sometimes we don't take the time just to be in the moment, live with what is happening now. Yes. And enjoy it. It may be bad, it may be good, it may be sweet, it may be painful, but it's what's happening now. It's what we have.
Good point. There's music everywhere. We just got to listen to it. Now, Frank, you once told me that you're old enough to remember the last vestiges of what you call the old Ireland. Things like thatched cottages, draft horses working in the fields. And you mentioned that in those days, there was a belief in fairies. And from what I read, the idea of fairies in Ireland is a bit different than the American version. We think of fairies as little Tinkerbell creatures, but tell us about the Irish fairies.
The Irish fairies, Eric, are a remnant of the old gods. They say at one time in Ireland, the land was inhabited by a people called the Tuatha De Danann, who were very strong and powerful in magic. And when the humans came, the Milesians, they fought a battle. The Tuatha De Danann lost. Milesians agreed to divide the land with them. So the Tuatha De Danann became the fairy people, or the Dina Shí. They went to live underground in the hills, in the fairy forts, in the spring wells, in the sea caves. And they cast an invisible cloak between their world and ours. And every now and again, there is some crossing over from both sides. As the years have rolled on, the fairy people dwindled down to become leprechauns in modern culture and the banshee you may have heard of.
Yes, yes.
But the old Irish fairies are way more dangerous than cute little leprechauns or Tinkerbells. Lannan Shí could make a man fall in love with her and waste away pining for her until he died. Mm-hmm. Cluricaun could empty a vat in a wine cellar, no problem at all, drink you out of house and home.
These aren't Tinkerbell here.
These aren't Tinkerbell, and they're shapeshifters. You could be in a group of people and one person in the company maybe from that other world.
Ah, so fairies could be the guy right next to us.
Absolutely. Always be careful in an Irish pub, Eric.
Good advice, Frank. Well, let's hear your second story. It's a folk tale. What is it called again?
It's called Dip the Finger. So this story is about a man called Pat McKenna and a house he built. In my grandfather's 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 time, there lived a man called Pat McKenna on the mountain in North Monaghan. And Pat built a new house for himself and his wife. But the one thing that he had done that he didn't realise he had done, he built his house on a fairy path. And when he moved into his house, he had a bedroom at one end and the kitchen in the centre with the open hearth fire. When he moved into his house, he never got a night's peace from the first moment he moved in, because he would be in bed at night with his wife, and at midnight the front door would slam open, bang shut, footsteps would tip-tap across the kitchen floor, a voice would murmur, and all would be quiet. And himself and his wife were very afraid. But as this went on, they became more familiar with the sound. And when you become more familiar with something, it tends not to be as fearful anymore. So Pat resolved to find out what was causing the noise. He got up one night and he hid behind the settle bed beside the hearth fire. And at midnight, when the door of the house sprung open and slammed shut, and he heard the footsteps tip-tapping across the floor, he was able to peek out and he saw a small man, about 2.5 feet high, with a beard like somebody who had been in COVID lockdown for about 40 years. And this little man came over to the fireplace, opened his jacket. He was wearing a green jacket, and he reached inside and he took out a silver dish. And then he pointed the finger of his right hand up in the air and he said, "Dip the finger, not the thumb, and hie away off to Scotland." And he touched the centre of the little silver dish with his finger, and whoosh, up the chimney he went. Pat couldn't believe his eyes. And the following night he watched again, and the same performance was repeated. The little man came in, walked to the fireplace, took out the silver dish, put his finger in the air, said, "Dip the finger, not the thumb, hie away off to Scotland," and whoosh, up the chimney he went again. Well, the third night, Pat moved even closer to the open hearth fire. And when this small man came in, walked over to the fireplace, took out the little silver dish and said, "Dip the finger, not the thumb, and hie away off," before he could hie away off anywhere, Pat jumped out from behind the settle bed, grabbed the fairy, but suddenly he was just grabbing thin air. The fairy had disappeared. And he looked all around. He couldn't believe his eyes. He thought maybe he imagined it when he saw the silver dish on the floor. And he picked it up and he looked at it and he thought, well, sure, nothing ventured, nothing gained. He put his finger in the air and he said, "Dip the finger, not the thumb, and hie away off to Scotland." And he touched the centre of the silver dish with his finger. And such a fright he got, he dropped the dish as whoosh, up the chimney went Pat, flying through the air, over the countryside, over the sea, over land again, until he saw the lights of a big city on the horizon, and he started to come down and down and down until he landed just after midnight in the yard of a brewery in the city of Glasgow. And the brewery was locked for the night, and there were crates all around Pat, and they were full of bottles of beer. And he was very thirsty after his journey, so he thought he'd have a drink. And of course, when he had one, he thought, well, a bird never flew on one wing, and I'm after flying from Ireland. So he had two. And sure, then out of pure boredom, he had a third. And an old man told me one time, Eric, that the problem with drink was that one wasn't enough, and two was too much, and three wasn't half enough. So when Pat had the third, he kept drinking. And the next morning, when the brewery workers opened up the yard, they found a drunken Irishman and empty bottles all around him. And they said, "Aha, at last we've caught our thief, the person who's been breaking into our brewery for the last number of weeks and stealing our beer." Because what Pat had seen was a Cluricaune, one of those fairies who drinks beer. And in those days, he was hauled straight before the court and had to face a judge. And they say, after drink comes thirst, and after drunkenness comes sorrow. And Pat was very sorrowful indeed, because the judge sentenced him to death. But he did grant him one last request. So Pat said, for his last request, he would like to give his wife a goodbye kiss. And could he write home to her? The judge said, "How long are you married?" He said, 20 years. He said, "If you still want to kiss her after 20 years, you're more than welcome to write home to her." So Pat wrote home to his wife in Irish, so the English wouldn't be able to read it. And he said to her, if she found a little silver dish that he had dropped on the night he disappeared, to be sure to bring it with her. So on the day of Pat's execution, he was put into a cart, hauled by a donkey down to the gallows, and people throwing rotten fruit and vegetables at him as he approached the gallows. And the soldiers were all around the cart, but his wife, her presence was announced, and they made a pathway to let her get into the cart beside him and to give him his final kiss. He said to her when she got into the cart, "An will an rud agat," in Irish, which means, "Do you have the thing with you?" She said, "Ja, yes." So Pat said, "Put it in my hand," and she did. And when she did, he said, "Dip the finger, not the thumb, and highway back to Ireland." And he touched the centre of the silver dish with his finger, and whoosh, up into the air went Pat, and whoosh went his wife along with him, and whoosh went the cart, and whoosh also went the donkey, all the way back to Ireland, where they landed on Pat Street in North Monaghan. And Pat took turf, which we burn on the fireplace, home from the bog with that donkey and cart for years afterwards. And I know the story is true because I was shown a piece of that turf when I was a boy.
Ah, yes. I love it. So it went full cycle. He went back home. I love it. I guess he got framed by a fairy, but there's a happy ending there.
Yeah, and that's what he says. Sometimes you could be very unlucky to cross paths with a fairy. Sometimes you can be very lucky indeed.
Yes. Well, if I ever come across one of those guys with a little silver dish, I am going to be careful. So what inspires you to tell stories, Frank? What makes you say, hey, I got to tell this story?
Oh, I think it's from when I was a kid, and old men would tell me stories, Eric, and we'd also tell jokes in school. And most of the stories are good fun. They make you laugh. And lots of the old men had quick, witty answers and riddles that they would put to us as young people. And that's what I enjoyed.
Yeah. In Ireland, they have such a rich appreciation of storytelling that it's just amazing. Okay, well, Frank, thanks for being with us here tonight. I really enjoyed all three of your stories. And if you ever get to Houston, give me a call. Maybe you could come down to our studio and we'll swap a few stories.
I would be delighted, Derek. Just don't let me near your bars or you might think you have a Cluricon in Houston.
Okay. Wait a minute. That's some Irish stereotypes going here. We better be careful.
Yeah, I better not do that.
I'll be right with you, Frank. Okay, how do you say goodbye in Irish?
Sloan.
Sloan? Thanks for being with us and best of luck to you. Sloan.
Sloan, Eric.
Well, we're going to take a break from our stories now for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. Our sponsor is the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild holds various storytelling events, including a monthly story swap, the fourth Tuesday of every month, and everyone is invited to those swaps. You can find out more about them, as well as the Guild's other events, by visiting HoustonStorytellers.org. And while you're on that same website, be sure to check out our program there. Just go to the So What's Your Story tab, and you can find archives of our program dating all the way back to 2008. And we are also on Facebook, so you can go to the So What's Your Story Facebook page and keep up with all the latest happenings with our program. And don't forget our friends at the Moth Storytelling Organization. They hold monthly story slams the second Tuesday of every month down at the Warehouse Live on Emanuel Street. Their next swap will be April 11th, and the theme for the stories that night will be clean. So if you have any stories having to do with cleanliness, I suppose, you might want to go down there and tell it.
Our next storyteller is John David Hobbs Hickey. John David Hobbs Hickey has been telling fables, folk tales, and legends across Canada for over 20 years. He's won several storytelling competitions, and his band, Tailstrum, was named one of the top spoken word acts in Best of Montreal in 2012. Recently, David's been spotted spinning yarns at steampunk events across North America as Professor Tailstrom. Hey, David, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
So what's this Professor Tailstrom persona all about?
So Professor Tailstrom is an attempt to take storytelling into the geek con world and the steampunk world to make storytelling more approachable to that community. And basically, Professor Tailstrom is the same. I tell the same story as the professor as I would as a normal storyteller. The only difference is that I put on a bit of a British accent. And there's something about North Americans, when they hear a British accent, they just submit. I think it's in their DNA.
Now, we better be careful about the British, because our theme tonight is Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
David, you're not an Irish citizen. You're Canadian.
Yes.
But you seem to be affiliated quite a bit with Irish storytelling. So yes. How did this Irish connection come about?
Well, I am of Irish descent. So my family name is Hickey, which is definitely an Irish name. My family came from Tipperary. And so we have a lot of Irish culture in my family. But I've always enjoyed Irish culture and Irish storytelling. That's really how I got my start. Lots of traditions there. I've been to Ireland for a few times. My sister lives in Galway, married a man from Clada.
Well, David, your first story is called The Man With No Story.
Yes.
And so let's hear your first story.
All right. So once upon a time, there was a young man who was walking the roads of Ireland when he found himself between two villages after dark. But off in the distance, he could see a light. So he made his way towards it. And there he found a little thatched cottage with a candle burning in the window. He knocked on the door and the door was open to him. And there was an old woman and she took him in and she showed him where he would sleep. And then she led him to the turf fire and she shared what food she had with him. And after a time, as she turned to the young man, she said, "So, do you have a song that you could sing? Because if you're going to be shown hospitality, you're expected to entertain." But the young man shook his head. He said, "I'm sorry, I'm not much of a singer." "Well, then maybe you could tell me a story, something you know, something you like, maybe news about what's going on in the other towns." And again, the young man shook his head. He said, "I'm not much of a storyteller either. And please do not ask me to dance. It's just embarrassing." And a dark look crossed that old woman's face. And she said, "Well, why don't you pick up that white enamel bucket and go out and draw water? At least you could be useful." This he could do. So he picked up the bucket and he went off into the darkness. And there in a shaft of moonlight was the well. Came over to the well. There was a rope. He tied it to the bucket, lowered the bucket into the well, waited for it to fill up with water. And he was getting ready to pull it back up when it seemed to be stuck on something. He pulled and pulled and the bucket would not budge. So he took the rope and he looped it around his wrist and he reached deep inside the well, bracing himself against the wall, getting ready to pull with all of his strength. When suddenly someone pulled at the other end and that young man fell into the well. Down, down, past the flagstones. And when he hit the water, because he had the rope looped around his wrist, he was pulled through the water, came out the other end, and landed hard on the ground. Found himself in a strange land. He looked up and he could see the well sticking out of the sky and the white enamel bucket lying on its side. And that's when he noticed the three men. Well, if you could call them men, they were tall and they were thin, and their skin was pulled tight across their bony faces, and where there should have been eyes, there was only darkness, and they looked at him. "Who will carry the coffin?" said the first man. "I don't know," said the second man. "Well, who else but the traveling stranger?" said the third man, and they picked him up and they put him underneath the coffin, and they began to run. And they ran away from the well, and they ran across the meadows, and they were running through the forest, and they ran until they reached the cemetery. Finally, they stopped and the young man fell exhausted on the ground. Still, they looked at him. "Who will dig the grave?" said the first man. "I don't know," said the second man. "Well, who else but the traveling stranger?" said the third man. And they threw him a shovel. And they forced him to dig a hole that was 9 feet deep and 6 feet wide. And he finally climbed out of that hole and fell exhausted on the pile of dirt he had created. Still, the men looked at him. "Who will lie in the coffin?" said the first man. "I don't know," said the second man. Well, the young man wasn't waiting around for the opinion of the third man. He just got up and started to run. And he ran out of the cemetery and he was running through the forest when he looked behind him and he could see the three men were chasing after him. And before, where there was only darkness in those eyes, flames shot out of their skulls as they reached for him. He ran through the forest and across the meadow, and in the distance he could see the well sticking out of the sky and a white enamel bucket lying on its side. He grabbed the bucket and began to climb the rope up into the well. He looked behind him and he could see the three men were climbing after him, and now black smoke poured out of their mouths as they reached for him. He climbed up into the well. He held his breath through the water. He jumped out of the well. He untied the white enamel bucket and he ran straight for the house, banging on the door. "Let me in," he said. "Let me in, or the dark men, they will get me." The door was open to him, and there was the old woman, and she said, "Who doesn't have a story now to tell?" That young man lost consciousness right there on the doorstep. When he woke up, he could feel rain on his face. And he looked for the old woman. She was nowhere to be seen, although he saw the white enamel bucket lying on its side. But he noticed that there were crows on every wall, and the roof had caved in. You could see no one had lived in that house for many years. He picked up his pack and he ran out of there as fast as he could. In all the years that he roamed the land of Ireland, he was never without a story again.
Ah, yes. I love it. I guess that's what it takes to get a story.
Takes adventure.
So when you tell a story, what do you want your audience to get out of it?
I want them to forget where they are. I want them to suddenly think that they are somewhere else when I'm telling them a story and totally forget the job, the life, and I just get lost in this story.
Now, David, let's hear your next story. It's called Lex and the Blacksmith.
Yes, Lex and the Blacksmith. All right. So once upon a time, there was a man named Lex, and he was a blacksmith. And although he smoked too much and he drank too much, he was the best blacksmith in the four counties, and everyone liked him well enough. Now, one day, Lex was working in his shop when through the doorway came a woman. And in one hand, she had the leg of a cauldron. And in the other, she had a cauldron with only two legs. And when Lex saw this woman, he knew she was a witch. So he got to work on her cauldron, reattaching the leg. And when he was done, the witch said that she had no money to pay him. Now, this was no trouble for Lex because, honestly, it took almost no time. And he didn't want the witch changing him into something he had no interest in being. But she said, no, I'm happy to pay you, just not with money. I'm going to give you three wishes. What's your first wish? Well, Lex didn't have to think about that one for very long. He said, you know what? People are constantly coming into my shop and they're always borrowing my tools. So I want you to fix it so that if anyone picks up any of my tools, they can't put them down unless I say so. Done, said the witch. What's your second wish? Well, Lex had to think about that one for a while, and he said, you know, people come to visit me. Sometimes they don't stay very long, and sometimes they stay for too long. I want you to fix it so if anyone sits in any of my chairs, they can't get up unless I say so. Done, said the witch. What's your third wish? Well, Lex had to think about that one for a long time, and finally he said, you know what, money is always tight. I don't know where it goes half the time. I want you to fix it so whenever I put money inside my wallet, it doesn't come out unless I say so. Done, said the witch. She picked up her cauldron and she walked out. Now, the rest of that year for Lex was pretty uneventful. He still smoked too much and he still drank too much, but he didn't spend nearly as much money on the horses until finally it was the hottest day in summer. And into Lex's shop walked a man all dressed in black. Black leather pants with flames stitched up the side, a black shirt, a black jacket, a black hat with silver skulls. And as soon as Lex saw this man, he knew he was looking at the devil. The devil came over to Lex and he said, Lex, I've been waiting a long time for your soul. You're coming with me and we are going for a walk and I think you know where we're going. And Lex said, devil, I am so ready to go with you. Look, I'm just going to put my shop in order and we can go. Just hand me that hammer and I'll put it away. Well, the devil reached over and picked up the hammer. And when he did, he knew he was in trouble because try as he might, he could not let that hammer go. He took the other hand and he tried to pry the hammer out of the first hand, and his hand became stuck. He picked up a foot, and he tried to push the hammer out of his hand, and now the foot was stuck, and he was hopping around the shop like a fool. Lex, Lex, said the devil, help me. I can't let go of this hammer. Well, I can help you, said Lex, but I want you to promise me I won't see your ugly mug in these parts for a whole year. Anything, anything, said the devil. Lex snapped his fingers, and the hammer fell out of the devil's hands. He was so surprised, he tripped over both feet and he fell out of the shop. And he wasn't seen in those parts for a whole year, but a year to the day. He It was the hottest day in summer. It was the hottest day in 10 summers, and into Lex's shop walked a man all dressed in black. Black leather pants with the flames stitched up the side, the black shirt, the black jacket, the black hat with the silver skulls. And as soon as the devil saw Lex, he said, "No more tricks. You're coming with me and we're going for a walk, and I think you know where we're going." Lex said, "Devil, I am so ready to go with you. Look, I'm just going to put my shop in order, have a seat. I'll be right with you." So the devil went over and sat in one of the chairs. And as soon as he did, he knew he was in trouble, because try as he might, he could not get out of that chair. He pushed and pulled and tugged until finally he cried out, "Lex, Lex, help me. I can't get out of this chair." "Oh, I can help you," said Lex. "But I want you to promise me I won't see your ugly mug in these parts for a whole year." "Anything, anything," said the devil. Lex snapped his fingers. The devil jumped out of that chair. He was so surprised, he tripped over both feet and he fell out of the shop. And he wasn't seen in those parts for a whole year. Year to the day. It was the hottest day in summer. It was the hottest day in 100 summers, and into Lex's shop walked a man all dressed in black. Black leather pants with the flames stitched up the side, the black shirt, the black jacket, the black hat with the silver skulls. And as soon as the devil saw Lex, he said, "No more shenanigans. You're coming with me, and we're going for a walk, and I think you know where we're going." Well, what could Lex do? He dropped what he was working on, and he walked out into the summer sun with the devil. Now, it was so hot on that day, even the devil was sweating. And when Lex saw that, he had an idea, and he said, "Devil, look, I can see you're suffering. Look, I'm not without compassion for you. I've got an idea that'll ease your suffering. Not only that, it'll cheat an honest man out of a day's pay." "I'm listening," said the devil. Lex said, "Look, you change yourself into two shiny dimes, and I'll take those dimes and walk into that general store, and I'll buy two cream sodas. I'll pay with that money, and then I'll come back out here. You change yourself into moths or flies or something. Come out here. I'll give you one cream soda. I'll have the other cream soda, and we will continue our walk on this beautiful summer's day." "I like the way you think, Lex," said the devil, and he disappeared in a puff of black smoke, and on the ground there were two shiny dimes. Lex reached down, he picked up the dimes, and he put them in his wallet. And as soon as he did, the devil knew he was in trouble, because he could not get out of that wallet, and he couldn't change himself back into human form. So Lex walked into the blacksmith shop, he put the wallet on the anvil, he got out his favorite hammer, and he let fly with that hammer and struck the wallet with all of his strength, and the hammer exploded. Lex was tossed back 10 feet. Well, he wasn't going to give up. He picked up a sledgehammer, and he came over to the anvil, let fly with that sledgehammer, and as soon as it hit the wallet, the sledgehammer bounced off, went right through the ceiling and through the roof, and Lex was tossed back through two walls, and he found himself on the street. Well, he wasn't going to give up. He got up, dusted himself off, and he went into the shop, and he found the biggest hammer he could find. He could barely lift this thing over his head, and he went teetering and tottering through the blacksmith shop, aiming for the anvil, let fly with that hammer, and as soon as it touched the wallet, the hammer exploded, and the wallet was reduced to ash. The blacksmith, he blew itself apart, and the ashes from the wallet mixed in with the ashes from the forge, and it formed a mushroom cloud that covered the world. And everyone in the world started breathing in that ash. And suddenly, everyone started telling lies. Now, some of those people became bankers. And some of them became politicians and lawyers. And the rest of them, well, they became storytellers.
Yes, great story. I think storytellers are the only people who take it as a compliment if you tell them they're a good liar.
An entertaining lie is a beautiful thing.
We have here in Houston, I don't know if you have it up there, but we have once in a while a liar's contest.
Oh, yes.
People get
I've
up.
I've been a judge on one of those.
It's oh, great. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're great fun.
Now, your last story tonight, David, is about this intriguing character that seems to keep popping up in these Irish stories. We heard one earlier from Frank McCarron about this character named Finn McCool.
Yes.
You're familiar with Finn.
Oh, yes. Yes. He's a wonderful archetypal character. He has stories, not just when he was a warrior. There's stories about when he was a child all the way to an adult. Lots of great Finn McCool stories.
Well, let's hear one.
All right. Now, once upon a time in the land of green, there lived the greatest warrior that you have ever seen. Not Robin Hood. That's England, you fool. I'm speaking of Finn McCool and his Fianna, a hardy band of men. known to kill a Viking now and then. They visited Ireland, Scotland, and Wales, and the adventures they had live on in the tales that we tell. And so to the Isle of Arran. Why they went to a place so barren, it's a mystery. But they never went back. The tale behind that is mighty good crack. Now, Finn McCool and the Fianna were lost on the Isle of Arran, exploring it when suddenly a dark fog fell about them. And they couldn't see where they were going, and they couldn't see where they had been. And these were some of the finest trackers that Ireland had ever seen. But through the fog, they spied a light, and they made their way towards it. And there they found a little thatched cottage nestled right inside the mountain with a candle burning in the window. So Finn McCool himself went to the front door, and he knocked on it. The door was open to him, and there was an old man who looked at them. And then the Finn McCool said, "Ah, old man, I am the great Finn McCool, and these are my Fianna. Show us some of your Irish hospitality and let us sit by your turf fire and take the chill out of our bones." And the old man looked at him. He was not impressed. Finn McCool began to continue to talk. He said, "Old man, do not know who we are. We are the Fianna. Imagine someday you could tell your grandchildren about the day Finn McCool and the Fianna came to visit you." The old man did smile. The smile was without warmth. Smiles without humanity. And when the Fianna saw that smile, they felt a chill in their bones that had nothing to do with the fog. But he let them in. And they came into that man's cottage, and they piled up their stuff in a corner, and they warmed their hands by the turf fire, and they began to tell each other stories and jokes. And after a time, a young lady appeared, and she served them cakes and bread and cheese and ale. Oh, and the Fianna, they were quite taken with her because she was quite beautiful. They tried to charm and seduce that girl, but she pushed them away, and she would say, "You took no time to appreciate me when you had me, and now I have no time for you." Even the great Finn McCool tried to charm and woo that girl, but she pushed him away. "You took no time to appreciate me when you had me, and now I have no time for you." And the Fianna thought this to be strange. They went to Finn McCool, and they said, "We've never seen this girl before, and yet she speaks of us as if she knows us." Finn McCool thought it was true that this was strange, but said nothing. They continued to enjoy the evening, and after a time, there was a knock at the door. The girl went over to the door and opened it, and there was a goat. The goat came into the cottage, and he began to make a nuisance of himself. He was eating the cheese and the bread. He was drinking the ale, and he was butting his head in the legs of the Fianna until finally the old man cried out, "Ah, I can't believe that girl let that thing in here. Finn McCool, you are one of the great warriors of Ireland. Surely you can capture a goat for me, tie it up by the turf fire." Finn McCool said, "Of course." But the goat was too fast. It was too wiry. It was too vicious. It took every man of the Fianna to hold that goat in place. And finally, Finn McCool came over to lift it. But the goat was so heavy, he could barely lift it. In fact, the flagstones cracked beneath his feet. The old man said, "Ah, you want something done right," he said. "You've got to do it yourself." And he reached out with his cane, and he caught the goat by the horns and dragged it over to him and tied it up by the turf fire. When the Fianna saw that, they were alarmed. They went to Finn McCool, and they said, "How could this old man have succeeded with you and your great strength have failed?" Finn McCool said, "Yes, there is something amiss here." And he turned to the old man, and he said, "Old man, you are not what you seem. Tell me, who is that girl? For every Fianna to the man swore to me that he had never seen her before, and yet she spoke of us as if she knew us. Who is she?" "Ah, Finn McCool. That girl is youth. And she spoke truly when she said that none of you took the time to appreciate her when you had her, and now she has no time for you, for no man can reclaim his lost youth." At this, Finn McCool stood up and faced the old man, and he said, "Old man, tell me, what is that goat?" "Ah, Finn McCool, that goat is the world, and no man can tame the world. Any man who tries only makes a bigger mess of everything." And at this, Finn McCool drew his sword, and he pointed it at the old man. He said, "Old man, who are you?" "Finn McCool, I am death, for only death can master the world. And as great as you are, and as great as you will be, one day you and I will meet. You will not best me." And at this, the Fianna drew their swords and made to attack the old man, but instead they all fell asleep. And when they woke up, they found themselves inside of a cave. The house was gone, the girl was gone, the man was gone, so was the goat. And every Fianna, they picked up their belongings, they left the Isle of Erin, and they never returned.
Ooh.
And that is the story of Finn McCool and the old man.
Well, that is some pretty deep stuff, David.
Thank you.
So the girl represented youth, the goat was
the world,
and the old man was death.
Yes.
Okay. I guess that's about all we have time for, David. But if you're ever in Houston, why don't you swing by our studio?
I would love to. Yes, I would love to.
And before you go, I'd like to mention your website. It's johndavidhickey.ca. I guess that's for Canada.
Yes,
JohnDavidHickey.ca. You got some great videos there and some CDs and tell about your upcoming events. So it's JohnDavidHickey.ca. So do you have any parting words of wisdom for us, David? Anything to leave us with?
I would recommend that your listeners, if there was any stories here that they loved, that they tell it again and again, because that's how stories live. We hear them, we make a few little changes, and then we tell them to another person. That would be amazing.
Yes, our stories never die. Thanks again, David. You take care. Hope to see you in Houston someday.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's our show for the night, folks. I hope you all enjoyed these Irish stories as much as I did. And a big thanks to Pat Spate, Frank McCarron, and David Hickey for being our guests, and also for carrying on the fine tradition of storytelling. And keeping in the Irish spirit, we're going to ease on out of here tonight with Finnegan's Wake by The Dubliner. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or drinking a pint in an Irish pub, keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Eric Heen, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
He was made of shake, fell from a ladder, and he burst his skull, so they carried him home as cops awake, rolled him up in a nice clean sheet, laid him out upon the bed, a gallon of whiskey at his feet, a barrel of porter at his head. Whack with a dad of that's the partner with the glorious shutter shake, but it is fruit they told him that's a foot that fitting his way. At the wake, and Mrs. Finnegan called for lunch. First they brung in tea and cake and pints of baccy and whiskey punch.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Melissa from Michigan. I work an extra part-time job serving lunch at my child's school, but I still can't afford to put food on our table.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
It's 90.1 KPFT. Time to check in with the Ronnie and Tom Show.
Nothing like going to Boston and thinking, man, those people talk funny. And you know what they think about us.
Well, everybody all over the country thinks that about us. You know, whenever I've traveled anywhere, you know, and of course, I really don't have any kind of a Texas or Houston accent. You can't really tell where I come from. Well, no, I don't, man. I've got the great American, middle America speech. I mean, y'all know that, right?
Yes, yes, Mr. Renfro, we are aware of that.
Did you?
Of that belief on your part, that
no,
is.
No, no, no. Yes, I mean, you cannot tell that I'm from Texas. I sound like I'm perhaps from Minnesota.
Join the fun and the great decades of music weekday afternoons, 2 to 4 here on KPFT.
It all rolls into one. 1 p.m. Saturday, that is. That's when Deadbeat starts on 90.1 KPFT, a three-hour musical ride each and every week featuring the music of the Grateful Dead and surrounding family. 90.1 is not a strange place on the dial, but you can get shown the light.